Hey everyone, welcome back to the Thrive in EDU podcast. I am Rochelle Denae Poth, and I am excited today for our episode because I have a guest with me, which if you've been listening, you know that I don't often have guests. I usually have a conversation with myself. So anytime I have a guest, it's always an awesome day. And so we're going to be having a great chat that I'm looking forward to. But before I forget, make sure you subscribe to the podcast and go back and listen to all of the episodes, especially the ones where I am actually having a conversation with somebody. But we're going to dive in. And so I would love to welcome my guest today, Nicole Biscotti.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really awesome to get to talk to you, Rochelle. You do so much in so many spaces. I really admire that. And I'm excited to talk to you on the show.
Yeah, I've been excited to talk to you as well. And we connect, like you said, in a lot of different spaces. We have a lot of things in common. With interests and with writings and with things that keep up, I don't know, keep us up at night, I guess, and keep us busy. So that's not necessarily a bad thing because we're educators. We have to keep on learning. And I know a lot about you, but I have a lot of listeners who may not yet know you, or they might know of you and not a lot about you. So would you first give us a little bit of an introduction about, you know, who you are, how you got to where you are today?
Sure. So my name is Nicole Biscotti, as you said. I'm a Spanish teacher just like you, and I love AI just like you. I'm from New York City. I currently live in Mexico, and I cross the border every day to teach in Southern California, very Southern California, obviously. And I got into writing about ADHD and speaking about it because of my youngest son, Jason. I have four kids, and the first three were very compliant children in school. And then came Jason, and he taught me a lot. And he also taught me a lot about what we don't know sometimes as general education teachers about special needs. And that's a little about me.
Yeah, so there's a couple things there I did not know about you, that you, where you were from. And I did not know that you were living in Mexico and that back and forth every day. So goodness, that's a lot. Oh my, I have a cousin who did the same thing for years, and just the amount of time just in the commute itself each day, I just can't imagine like just how long. I mean, our teaching days are long, but then I guess I shouldn't complain about the commute that I have to and from school, because it's definitely nothing like what you're experiencing. So I want to go back first to one thing that you said about general education teachers, because it was probably, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago. It could be 7 years ago at this point, because, you know, that whole time perception in the last couple of years, it's hard to track. But I remember being at an ed camp, and there were some different, you know, breakout rooms. And for people that are not familiar with ed camps, they're kind of like conferences. It's just, there's not really a set schedule. There may be a couple of sessions proposed and you just kind of walk around, but somebody held a session that was focused on basically what general education, like what general educators need to know about special education. And so I picked that session to sit in on, and I couldn't believe, like, there were so many things, and I was so thankful for that session that I ended up then writing a blog about it. But then when I got my master's in Pennsylvania, things changed since I have an undergrad back in, you know, last century. They changed some of the requirements, and I had to take, I think, 5 different special education courses. And so I really learned a lot about a lot of different things. And I remember having to write an IEP, for example, and just how time consuming that is. And just, it gave me such an appreciation for the work that is done by, you know, people who work in special education. And you're right, like a lot of people who are, you know, in general education teach those types of topics or content areas don't necessarily know all about it. And like, we need to know, like there needs to be conversations about it. So when you said that, I was like, yes. And there are lots of ways for anybody who is interested. I know you share a lot of great resources all of the time. But anyway, that was just one thing that popped out that I wanted to go back to. I'm like, yes, that is something years ago. I was so thankful for that experience. So before we dive into our topic or some of our topics today, I'm just curious, besides the work that you do every day inside of school, outside of school, that works or that's focused on, you know, work and learning, and sharing all that you're doing. What else are you up to? What do you do in your free time, if you have any free time, for fun?
Well, first of all, I just want to backtrack and say, God bless that guy that gave that PD, because it's really a topic that's very overlooked, honestly, and becoming more and more relevant as we are teaching more kids with identified special needs and unidentified. What do I do in my free time? Well, right now I'm teaching high school Spanish during the day, and then two nights a week I'm teaching a GED program, one class in English and one class for people that are taking it in Spanish. And then the other two nights I'm teaching ESL. So my days are pretty long, and then I have this major commute, and then I have three teenagers at home still. So I don't have a lot of free time. And then of course I'm writing books and doing podcasts and all of this, but really I'm pretty nerdy. So I'm really interested right now in language and how it evolves on the border. I'm Italian and Puerto Rican. That's my background. So I'm not even Mexican. And here I'm like living in the borderlands. And it's really fascinating to me to see how special needs and different cultures all converge. So I'm doing a lot of writing and research about that right now.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. And I, like you, I mean, language learning fascinates me, but I also love learning about the people and the different experiences. I have a couple of students that have come from different Spanish-speaking countries. And I'm, you know, Spanish is the third language that I learned. I mean, English was first, then French. And then I didn't start learning Spanish until I was in my 20s, and I could not get a job teaching just French. So I went back and became certified. So, you know, I've taught it for a long time, but there are all the different, I mean, even English right now, when some of the teenagers speak, I don't necessarily know exactly what they're saying. And we don't know all the words in the English language, but languages fascinate me, and learning about the different like school systems and just experiences, like getting to talk with these students, it's eye opening. And so like you said, like, I didn't know of your background either. So I'm learning a lot about you, and we've just started the conversation. So I'm really looking forward to talking about all the things. But I think, because you mentioned earlier when you were introducing yourself to AI, and that for me is something that six years ago, I think October is when I started to do some research on it, because I was writing blogs and for Getting Smart, and I was always writing about things I was doing in my classroom, because that's easy. Like, oh, I tried this today and this is how it went, and here's some ideas, and over and done. And I did that for a while. And I remember they had themes, and one of the themes for January of 2018 was AI. And so I thought, okay, I don't really know a lot about this. I'll dive in, did some research. And all I would think about was like, and when I do presentations, I'm like, all right, what does everybody think about first? Now that answer has changed. It's always, oh, ChatGPT or some tool they're using. But I always thought about Terminator and iRobot and things. And so I got really excited about it from that point on, like, oh, this is fascinating. Not knowing, you know, today where we are, how much it would change since then. So my interest sparked from just that first article that I wrote, and not realizing how much we're surrounded by it. But what first sparked your interest in AI in education?
Well, I think like you, it's fascinating. I want to just say that I'm 47. So like, I feel like my generation has had to like hyper adapt or something. That's a good word, hyper adapt with technology. And then being an educator really obligates me to continue to hyper adapt, because I feel very strongly that we have all of it. And AI is exploding, it's everywhere. I think all of the attention on AI has made me, excuse me, even realize how much AI was always around us for like, well, not always, but for a long time has been around us, but not so blatant and not so accessible to everybody. And the more you read about it, and the more you realize not only what it can do for you as a teacher, but what it can do for your students, your kids with special needs, but just overall realizing, I mean, I think I'm a little resistant sometimes to new things. I think we all are in different, you know, varying degrees, but just knowing that this is where things are moving, and quickly, And I have a responsibility to prepare youth. So I guess I feel like I need to stay on top of it, or, well, I'm definitely not on top of AI, but I read and write about it all the time, and I'm still not going to say I'm on top of it. But to stay relevant and stay, with an understanding of what's happening.
Yeah, and like I said too, even no matter how long you've been, researching it or teaching about it or reading about it or writing about it or anything, it's like it's impossible to stay ahead of it. But like if you have not done anything with it yet, you are really behind. And I have done just in the last couple of weeks, I've done a few sessions. I did actually a 6-hour workshop for world language educators just a couple of days ago, which is an awesome day. It's a very long day, but I always use a survey. And I did a survey, and one of the questions that I ask and I have asked is, have you used ChatGPT, just for example? And earlier this year, it was like 90% of people had not, and then it dropped off a little bit. But even still, over the last month, it has been the people that responded, it's been between 65 and 75% have not used it. And that's kind of like it's shocking to me because we're a year in with having access to it. And like you said, whether or not, I mean, we want to actually embrace the technology or learn about the AI, we kind of have to because we're in the best position to help students understand it. And also, it may very well replace a lot of the tasks and the things that we're doing in our classrooms and the technologies that we're using, and we're going to have to know about it. And so it can be scary because it's like, oh no, it's another new thing. But it's also something that offers a lot of benefits, of course, some challenges too. But in your opinion, what do you think are, and you kind of mentioned some of the, a little bit of it too, but what do you think are some of the benefits of AI when it comes to education?
Well, first of all, AI takes away a lot of the mundane tasks that we have to do as teachers. So if you learn how to leverage it, and every day there's more and new ways to do so and different technologies. But I have learned how to save a lot of time on things that were not necessarily a good use of my expertise as a teacher. So there's that. And then giving me more time and more bandwidth to focus on relationship forming, just being present to my students and not all stressed out about some of the mundane things I used to be. And I've also learned that students can really benefit from AI. First of all, because in my opinion, I think it's kind of interesting that teachers say there's all these conversations about should we adopt it or not. We don't actually get to choose what technologies are out there. We're not in that field that develops technologies. We're in the field that educates the next generation. So I feel like if you want to influence what technologies are available, you might be in the wrong field because our task is really to educate. So I feel really strongly that, like I said before, I have to stay, current with it. And I don't think that students are going to be, I think it's clear and evidence-based that students won't be relevant in their fields if they don't know how to use technology. And right now, AI is what it's all about. So there's that benefit to students, but there's also the fact that having that heart for special needs kids and ELL kids, there are so many ways that we can take supports that we used to kind of gatekeep in a way, and we can put them in the hands of the learner. And I think that's so key for kids to be able to know what supports they need, like know, hey, an outline helps me when I'm reading. Or a summary helps me when I'm reading because I get off task or I can very easily lose my focus and I can access that myself. I don't have to like fight with the teacher to get her notes.
Yeah, the one thing that you said that I've said often as well is the time factor, because there are a lot of things, and I said this the other day too, like when it comes to personalized learning, we talk about or differentiation and providing supports for students and giving them authentic and meaningful and timely feedback. Like we've been able to do that as educators pre-technology, because schools are not something new. All of these technologies, computers did not always exist, and teachers could do all of those things, and they still can't without all the tech. But the thing is that it does take extra time. So in my class, if I walk around and I ask each student a question or have conversations or have them do an activity and then I have to grade it, that takes time. And in that time, they're losing potential opportunities to continue to build their skills, or I'm missing out on opportunities to actually work with them one-on-one and have, you know, to build the relationships. And so when it comes to, you know, there's no shortage of tools, of course, but you do a quick 5-minute, you use one of those game-based learning tools and they have AI. And while the kids are answering questions based on their pace, based on if they're right or wrong, it can adapt and give them questions that they need. And then we get to see the big picture so quickly and then go to that one student and have the conversation. Or it helps us to save time that we can actually talk and work with our colleagues. And so there are a lot of benefits to it. And even beyond that too, like, I mean, just talking about the accessibility, the students being able to, you know, control their learning in a sense and get feedback when they need it in the space that they're in, or to develop confidence using some of the different things that are out there. Because the other day I looked at the site, there's an AI for that, and it is going up by like the thousands every week of all the apps that are out there. So there's clearly a lot of benefits, but there's also some challenges and some negatives that we have to consider with anything that we bring into our classroom. So for you, you know, when you think about it, like, are there any, you know, challenges or big concerns that stick out in your mind, or even, you know, looking at like ethical considerations, any of that, like, what are things that you think about or that you recommend other educators make sure that they are thinking about as well?
I think that I'd like to answer that in two parts, if I could. I think before we approach AI as educators, one of the hardest things, maybe the hardest thing about being an educator for me personally, is looking at my own bias, my own conditioning, my own experiences, and really learning to categorize those as mine and not necessarily relevant to the kid in front of me or the kids in front of me. And I think that we, right now we have like this little culture war or major culture war going on with technology and backlash after pandemic and all this. But the reality is that this generation of youth uses technology. That's how they communicate. They were born in a different time than us, and they just interact differently and engage differently with information, with people, with everything. So we have to learn to adapt to that. And I think that when we look at the negatives of AI and the concerns around it, I think we have to kind of recognize our own bias and our own conditioning before we can sincerely look at that, because there are negatives, but they're not always the negatives that we kind of knee-jerk think that they are. And I think that the things that we obviously do have to look at is, right now, the biggest skills we can give our kids are critical thinking. We've been talking about that for a long time. Well, AI makes that so much more relevant and more important, because when you get all this information so easily, but who's teaching kids how to decipher it, how to synthesize, how to deepen their research, how to seek evidence, how to recognize bias in writing? I think those are the kinds of conversations that we need to really move towards as educators.
Yeah, and that can be uncomfortable for educators, especially like looking, you know, elementary teachers. I don't know how they do it. Like, they cover all these content areas and they have all the curriculum, and like there's never enough time for a lot of these things. And then even, you know, middle school, high school teachers, higher education, talking about bias and talking about ethics, like, they can be uncomfortable conversations because you don't necessarily maybe know where, you know, what is the best resource to go to, or how to start the conversation, or you don't want to leave something out that needs to be part of the conversation. And fortunately, there are a lot of great organizations that offer, you know, full presentations, and they've been vetted and, you know, reviewed by a lot of different people in education, and they have videos and talking points and learning objectives. And so that is really helpful. And even just short little pockets of activities too. But I think the biggest thing that is kind of, it's not really a negative. It's just a concern that I know that I have, and this is not something new, it's just like the over-reliance on technology or finding the balance of when to use it and when not to use it. And the other day when I did my session, I had a couple like don'ts, you know, like one was don't assume technology is always correct because it makes mistakes. And I had another one that was a robot teacher. Like, don't replace teachers with AI. I mean, replace some of the tasks that teachers do, because then it can give back time for working with the students and building those relationships, which you know that are so important, or just for our own professional learning, to have that extra time back. And so those are some of the things I think of, but you know, the ethics and having conversations in class. And then you mentioned like the critical thinking. That's a big concern. You know, I know you've seen it probably too, like, what's going to happen to creativity and the critical thinking? And are we going to become lazy? And I don't think those are anything new. I mean, when Google showed up, like those were some of the concerns. When calculators came to be, it's like, oh no, now we got to watch and learn how to do math problems. Or we don't have to know how to do math problems anymore because we have calculators. There's always going to be something that makes us rethink our practice, of course. And, you know, are we asking the right questions? Are we having our students engage in different types of learning activities that is not just like repetition back and forth? It's like at higher levels. So that does, it all falls on us. So we have to build in the time, I think, or find extra time in our day to do things like that. But the one thing that I want to go back to, because I'd like to do like the layers, like, oh, here's the good. And what are some concerns? And then here's some things to grow on. We talked about, and you talked about, and I know this is something you focus on, obviously, because we've mentioned it, the special education and the students and their different needs. And so when it comes to AI, in the work that you've done and the things that you've written, to share with other people who may not know, what are the, you know, what's the potential with AI when it comes to students who have diverse learning needs?
I think that we have to change the conversation from, or start to shift it from adding extra to teaching a little differently, because the landscape is different now, the professional landscape that our students are going to step into, and the way that we engage with information is different. So for example, rather than talking about the elements of a poem and writing it down, you could take a narrative, throw it into, you know, paste it into ChatGPT, excuse me, and ask it to convert it to a poem. So you can right there see the difference between the two genres. So there's a lot of ways that we can really shift and grow the level, like getting more towards the higher order thinking with AI. And I think that that's where we're going to move as a society, really. Regarding special education and ELL populations, I have a lot of resources on my website and I've done a lot of PD about it, but really, when we look at the types of accommodations, and I always promote whole class accommodations because I really feel like they should be available to everybody and proactively. But when we look at the types of accommodations that we offer, chunking, for example, a lot of them fall into the category of really chunking or scaffolding. A lot of those strategies can be taught to students so that students can start to advocate for themselves and recognize, like I said earlier, like when they're reading a story or a text and starting to go off, or maybe noticing that this story is at a high level, but if I ask ChatGPT to rewrite it at a lower reading level, I might be able to understand it and then go back to this text with more background knowledge. Or maybe I don't understand this piece because it's too long. When I'm starting to read things that are long, I have trouble with that. My attention span isn't there. So asking ChatGPT to provide me chunked summaries. So I think there's a lot of ways that we can begin to partner up with our students to start to identify more specifically, not just getting the teacher's notes or writing an outline for the student, but really getting more specific about what needs they have when they're reading, doing math, doing science, every subject, Spanish. And helping them to access them on their own. And then I think that it opens up the door for some, I've had some really cool conversations with kids about, you know, Ms. B, when I ask the ChatGPT for comprehension questions, it really does keep me on track. Or I feel like I don't need questions, I just need an outline and things like that. So that's where I think we should be moving to.
Yeah, the it's amazing the number of things that you can do. And even with students, and assuming they're of age, of course, but like I've had students, and this also myself as like a virtual tutor. And sometimes, you know, even as adult learners, you might be afraid to ask for help with something. You don't understand something. I took a statistics course this summer, two of them, as part of my doctoral work. And they were both a huge struggle. And I didn't have access to the teacher like in person because it was an asynchronous course. And I have no idea how many other courses they were teaching, how many students were in all the other courses. And so I would ask ChatGPT, like, can you explain this to me? Like, you know, your role is as a high school teacher of a statistics course and you have sophomore students. Can you explain this to me? Like, I'm one of them. And I even had to take it down a little bit because I just, that's not something that I process very well when it, you know, math was not one of my strongest subjects and I needed that assistant. Not that it's a substitute for the actual teacher, but I couldn't work through any of the problems without having some kind of support. And so being able to use that in that way. And some of my students have said they do that for, you know, chemistry classes. It's like a study buddy sometimes where they're like, can you give me like 10 questions on this topic? Or even in Spanish, I say, don't you use that as a translator? But it's actually kind of neat to compare and see because it doesn't understand human context. But I like the ideas that you shared about, you know, just some of the different options. And for teachers, there are so many different tools that can help, especially if you have different, you know, you have a class of 30 and you want to provide the best learning experiences for them. And time is a factor. And so just having something that you can quickly create and of course, check it to make sure that it's right and it's the information is good, but then it gives you some time back, but it can help provide what each student needs at the different levels of reading. And there was a tool I used the other day. And I loved that it had, you know, fifth grade, fourth grade reading level, or it could summarize it. It can give outlines and so many different things. And I wanted to ask you this also too, kind of, I ask everybody this, you know, so let's say hypothetically you have a teacher who comes up to you and says, you know, there all this AI stuff I'm hearing about, I don't know, should I do anything with it? Should I just ignore it? Where do I start? Do you have any, you know, tips or advice that you tend to offer teachers when, because you said you do some different PD on different topics. And I know that you've spoken and written about AI. What advice would you give to some educators with all of your experience in these different areas?
I just shared with you a graphic that I made that gives some basic ways that you can use AI in each content area as sort of a starting point. That maybe you can share out. But on my website, I also have a couple blogs about me experimenting with AI in the classroom in more detail. So they might be relatable to people and help them to understand kind of my own use of AI. But I feel like you have to look at two things. You have to look at where are you spending a lot of time that's not a good use of your expertise. And then try to automate it. And it might be like the simplest thing. Like in Spanish, I'm always trying to find the right text because I try to teach grammar and context all the time. So, you know, finding something that involves our vocabulary that we're studying right now with the, I don't know, the preterite versus the imperfect. Like it's really hard to find a text like that. And it's time consuming to write them. So I can now just ask ChatGPT to do it for me. And that's like, voila, in 2 minutes, I have it. So, or, you know, less than that, but I have it all set up for my students. So looking at where you're spending a lot of time, that's not a good use of your knowledge and experience. And then I think B, one thing that we really have to look at is how are kids cheating with AI? And when I say AI, I'm gonna include Google in there. Like, how are they using tech in general to cheat? And why? Because there's always a why. So if we can figure out and have honest conversations with kids, you should really see how, or I don't know if you've done this, but if you just talk to kids about why they cheat, you could have some hilarious and super insightful conversations. Talk about relationship building.
Yeah.
But there's a why. So like, what is it that's, you know, there's always a reason why we cheat, right? Like, mm-hmm. what is it that they need, and then teaching them how to access it.
Yeah, I love that. And the A and the B that you gave, and yeah, that, and it's not like it's something new, you know, there's always, and I've said it so many times too, I'm like, there's always been a way to get around doing something that you've been assigned to do. And even in just like our daily lives. I mean, we can get somebody, you know, I don't want to clean my house. Hey, you know what? I can get somebody to come in and clean my house. I mean, it's simple as that. Even before technology, hey, I'll give you $5 to write this essay for me or to get, you know, it's not something new. It just, it has a different look to it and they have access to more. And I have engaged in some of those conversations about it. And some of the responses are like, because when am I ever going to need this? I just want to get through. You know, I didn't have time. You know, there's all those different excuses. But it is insightful because it helps us to think about what we're asking our students to do. And the one thing that I do always tell my students as in Spanish is like, I would not give you an activity to do or ask you to do something that I really did not believe was beneficial. But the flip side of that is I do ask them, like, what did you think about that? You know, can I improve on that? And they're honest. And sometimes their answers are hilarious. Like, this is like kind of related, but kind of unrelated. But I like sharing this story. And I actually wrote about it before, too. But I had a student who, like, you've done projects in your classes. And I'll give time in class for the kids to work on projects because I want to be there to support them. And not that I want to see if they're using translators, but you can tell when kids use translators because we know how their writing style. We know if they're in Spanish one, they're not going to write in the preterite tense unless it's like the end of the year. We taught them some basic ones. But I had been at a conference and the Spanish three class had a project and they had 3 days in class to work on it. And that was plenty of time. So one student didn't do it. I kid you not. 2 months later, he came in after school and he said, so I want to talk to you about that project. And I said, you mean the one from January? He said, yeah. And I said, what did you want to talk about? He said, well, can I still do it? I said, well, that was 2 months ago. And he said, well, I don't really see why that matters. And I laughed so hard. I said, okay, explain. He said, well, it's not that I didn't know how to do it. And it's not that I couldn't do it and I couldn't have written it. I just didn't feel like doing it during that time. I said, but you had 3 days in class to do it. And if this were a job and you had a task to do, like I'm pretty sure you would have been showing up for work for 2 months and you wouldn't be receiving a paycheck. But it got me to thinking like, yeah, you know, like that, it was just kind of funny conversation that he said, well, I don't really see why that matters. And so what are we asking students to do? Like, does it matter? Is it something that's going to enhance their learning and help them to build the skills that they need? Or is it Googleable or ChatGPTable at this point? Like people say that they can just get it out of the way. I don't know. It was just kind of a funny story, but yeah, you're right. Like those, if anybody's listening, if you haven't had conversations with your students about like, why do you copy homework or why are you cheating? Why are you using these? Definitely do that and see what they say. And, you know, make it a welcoming kind of comfortable space where they feel that they can actually be honest with you because that really goes a long way where you're not like, oh, don't you dare do that. But like, it helps us to learn too about like our practice and what we should do. So that leads me to another question that I have for you before we end up wrapping up the conversation. I've enjoyed talking with you so much. You know, we've been in education for a while and we've seen a lot of changes and there's always something new. There's new initiatives. There's new technologies. I mean, the list goes on and on. And so for you, I know what my challenges have been over the years. Like there's been a lot, but we're constantly learning and growing. And as you look back over your career in education, what are some of the things that you have experienced or challenges that you faced?
I think that I constantly face the challenge of embracing change and putting down my own perception of things as a teacher. And maybe I'm BSing myself, but I tell myself it keeps me young. Like I'm always challenged, but I'm always having to stay current. And I don't always do a good job of it, but I try because really my experience as a student has nothing to do with these kids in front of me's experience. It's completely irrelevant. Like we could just throw it out the window. I always come back to the fact that when I was a kid, I would wait for Saturday morning cartoons, and like whatever was on was on. And I remember like the Wizard of Oz would come on like a couple times a year, and that was like a whole event because I was a passive viewer. I received my content passively. And now I'm teaching kids that have been driving a iPad at the restaurant with their parents since they were like 2 or 3, and choosing what they want to see and what they want to do online. And we can't think that they're going to behave the same way in a classroom or learn the same way. So it's always having to think about how kids learn now, how they engage with the world around them. And like you said before, like we were talking about, why do they cheat? It usually has something to do with time management, or it has to do with relevancy is a big one. Interest, they can't connect it to something they're interested in. Or sometimes because they didn't know how to do it and they're afraid to have a bad grade. So those are all whys that we can address, and a lot of times technology can help us address them. So just showing them like, okay, you didn't really have to like get ChatGPT to write the essay for you. You could have asked ChatGPT to help you brainstorm about some relevant points though, to get you started. Or you could have had ChatGPT write an essay for you. And I can tell that it wrote it without even using a tool because it's super flat, and then thought about where you needed to expand. So just, being honest and being real. I think that's honestly where it's been the hardest for me as an educator. It's a daily challenge.
Yeah, I can relate to that too. Like I'm not the same teacher I was when I first started, nor 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even last week sometimes. Like it's just there are challenges that we face, and it you have to like you have a plan, you're like, it's the greatest plan ever. And then you're like, that was the worst thing I've ever done. And then you reflect on it. But even with the technology, like we constantly have to adapt, and that's a good thing. It can be stressful. But it's also a good thing, and involving students and giving us feedback as well is important too. And I didn't always do that. I didn't always share stories about my own experiences with like, oh, you know what? I got F's and D's in geometry. I didn't know how to study. So then I learned. I talked to the teacher. I got some help, and then I got straight A's the rest of the year, and I ended up with a C. I think students struggle sometimes, and the reasons, like you said, that they might copy or cheat is like time management. They don't understand. They're afraid to ask for help. And I think the more that we connect with them and say like, hey, okay, this is what we're learning. If you don't understand it, you can reach me. If you feel like you're going to go and use one of these resources, like let's talk about that. But you do need to develop these skills because it is important. And I always tell them, do you think when I was in 10th grade that I knew that I would be like a Spanish teacher? Because like in high school, I took French. I wasn't even taking Spanish. So it's all about like you never know what skills you're going to need in the future or what your interests, how they might change. And so it's always good to be reflective. And I was not always reflective in education, but I am definitely more intentional about reflecting on it now and just sharing stories too, because that really does help. And that's why I like doing the podcast. And not always talking to myself because it's good to talk with other people and learn from them. And so I've enjoyed talking with you today and learning some new things about you and just your experience. And I know that all of the knowledge that you have and the experience that you have in education, and I'll share all of your resources too and links that you have to your books and other blogs that you've written and the infographic as well. But I thank you for joining me. But do you have any last thoughts or things that you would like to share, words of wisdom? For the listeners.
Just that we really have to engage in authentic dialogue. We complain and we talk about kids not taking ownership, but are we releasing ownership? Are we? And that really starts with conversations. It really starts with being real with kids. A lot of educators right now are really concerned about the phone use in the classroom. But I have to be honest with you, when I'm really into a movie, I'm not on my phone. When I'm really interested in something, I'm not looking at my cell phone. So when kids are picking up their cell phone a lot in our classroom, that's information too. Maybe it's not the most engaging lesson. Maybe we think it is, but they don't. So just being real and having authentic dialogue.
Yep. I love that. Real and authentic. And I don't know how I say the word authentic or authenticity probably like 10 times every day, because I value it so much. And it's important, like in the be real part too. Like that wasn't something I was always comfortable with, is, you know, I have to be the teacher, you know, I can't be like Rochelle, you know, after 3 o'clock, I'm Rochelle. During the day, I'm a totally different person, you know, like alter ego. But now I've said, you know, what you see is what you get, you know, whether it's during school, after school, you know, and that does go a long way, especially with building relationships and building a space that's comfortable for all of the students in your classroom, and even connecting with the students who are not students in your class. That's important too, I think, as well. So thank you, Nicole, for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. And I wish I would have known that you did AI training around world language, because that's super cool.
I did two of them. I did one last week and one this week. And it was the first time that it was specific to world languages. And so I had to change a little thing, but it gave me an opportunity to go in and check out to see, especially when it comes to, you know, there are teachers that teach Latin, you know, Mandarin, Chinese, German, and there are some resources that don't offer those languages yet. So I was on this like scavenger hunt to find, like, I'm going to find some that have Latin or, you know, whatever the language is that you're teaching. So it's been fun. But for anybody who's listening, I will make sure to drop all of the information about Nicole into the show notes, how you can connect with her, reach out if you have questions, check out her books and her writing. She does translate books into Spanish, which is super awesome. And you are co-host of a podcast as well with Barbara Bray. So all the links will be in there, and you can connect with her to learn more. And I thank everybody for listening in today, and we will catch you the next time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been amazing. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you.